Hello and welcome to Occupied Thoughts, a podcast brought to you by the Foundation for Middle East Peace. I am Sarah Ann Minkin, Director of Programs and Partnerships at the Foundation. Today is April 5th, 2024, and I am so grateful to be here with Dr. Yara Assi, one of FMEP's 2023 Palestinian non-resident fellows. A few days ago, Israel announced that it had withdrawn its forces from Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital after a multi-week operation there. Yara and I are going to talk about the targeting of that hospital today. But first, some background on Dr. Yara Assi. Yara is assistant professor at the University of Central Florida in the School of Global Health Management and Informatics and a visiting scholar at the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard University in her capacity as co-director of the Palestine Program for Health and Human Rights. Her new book, How War Kills, Overlooked Threats to Our Health, came out a few weeks ago. She publishes regular commentary and research, which I highly recommend that you follow, and which FMEP shares regularly in our weekly news roundups. Yara, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sarah Ann, for having me.
You and I have had numerous conversations about public health in Gaza, about the limitations and burdens on the public health system and infrastructure before this war, about how this war has impacted the public health infrastructure in Gaza, including Al-Shifa Hospital, about how critically important it is to look at public health broadly in order to understand the full range of threats to life and survival that this war and displacement have caused. In February, you held an extraordinary conversation with Alex Duvall, global expert in starvation, about starvation and famine in Gaza. And we'll have links to all of these conversations in the show notes. Today, we're going to focus specifically on Al-Shifa Hospital. So I want to ask you to set the scene for us about this hospital and facility. What is its history, its importance? What role did it play in Gaza before this war?
Yeah, thank you, Sarah Ann. I'm glad we're having the chance to talk about this because I think with the end of the siege coinciding with the killing of the aid workers earlier this week, I feel like this was really overlooked. So Al-Shifa Hospital, to put it frankly, as the World Health Organization called it, was the heart of the healthcare system in the Gaza Strip. It is a very old hospital. It is older than the State of Israel. It was established during the British Mandate. It has been, of course, updated and equipped with as much equipment as can be imported into Gaza due to the blockade since. It had about, I believe, 750 to 800 hospital beds, several dozen operational theaters. And you can't really talk to a health professional who has been even in Gaza briefly who has not passed through Al-Shifa Hospital. It was not just logistically the largest and most important hospital, but it was really a symbolic facility in Gaza, in North Gaza, of course. And so, of course, in its long history, it has also been the site of a lot of violence, especially in previous wars. There's generally bombing in the vicinity. It has always served as a primary source of shelter for people who have fled their homes. So not just a lot of patients, but people who go to Al-Shifa for safety because they feel like if any place will be protected, they know not their home, not the school, let me try the hospital. And so seeing Al-Shifa be the site for so much damage, destruction, and now what local health staff are telling us, it is basically non-functional, is really a loss for the health system in Gaza and also just kind of devastating as we consider all of the lost history in Gaza that has been destroyed by Israeli missiles. So along with the museums and the libraries and the universities, Al-Shifa was as important as a historical and cultural site as well.
Thank you. Talk to us a little bit about the role that it's played during this war. You mentioned the shelter. Can you talk to us about numbers and the people who have gone there and also what role it's played in terms of medical care during this war?
It has been among the primary places to get medical treatment, of course, along with its size. So, and it also it's in a large kind of block complex with multiple buildings. So aside from the specialized services it was able to offer, it also had big courtyards, which served as really ideal, not ideal, but relatively open shelter area for thousands of families we know. Now, it was a place where, in the last few months, especially in the past 6 months, much of what it's been able to do is provide trauma services. In many cases, having to resort to amputations and other last resort measures because they don't have the fuel, the resources, the pharmaceuticals to do much more. It really, in November, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit more, it was besieged before, and we saw it had kind of retreated a bit, but people went back in order to make it functional because it how important it is. And importantly, if the listeners kind of know the geography of Gaza, it was in the northern half where many tens of thousands of Palestinians still remain despite evacuation orders and despite the significant amount of bombing that has affected the north. Many, thousands of homes, all the destruction, we can all see it online. So its ability to remain at least relatively functional was a lifeline for people in the north, as recently as mid-March. And now we heard from staff there that it is basically non-functional anymore.
Right, as you said, and we're going to go into the details of the destruction now. But before we do that, what do we want the audience to know about November, the when Israel first surrounded and invaded Al-Shifa Hospital?
Yes, so this was, just about over a month after October 7th. And the narrative at the time was that Al-Shifa was not only a military site, but was a command and control center for Hamas. And I don't know if your listeners will remember, but I will never forget the image that was posted on one of the IDF Twitter or X accounts of this computer-generated image of what was lying beneath Al-Shifa Hospital. It was hallways and meeting rooms and a Hamas command and control center. I mean, they used exactly this terminology. And so as part of their mission to quote-unquote eradicate Hamas, they entered and besieged the hospital. And the images that emerged were extremely harrowing. There were still patients, including babies, still at the hospital. Some were able to be evacuated. We saw destruction of some of the precious medical equipment. We saw, most importantly, very little to no evidence of this quote unquote command and control facility. So Israel did re release some images of arms that they said they found there. Some of the videos that were posted were found to have been edited later, or even outlets, major Western media outlets said that some of the images looked like they had been staged. They showed the entrance of this supposed command and control underground center, but they did not show anything resembling this infrastructure that they had said existed there that would justify, in their minds, of course, entering and besieging the largest hospital, because hospitals are afforded special protections under international humanitarian law, and I know we'll go into that as well. So if you are going to undertake such an action in a hospital, you have to have a solid emergency reason that there are, acts harmful to them that would require this kind of action. None of that was released. And even though the United States said that they agreed, that they had corroborated Israel's take on this, they were pressed many times for their evidence because the US is not on the ground there. Israel has not allowed independent investigations. It has not allowed independent journalists without IDF approval. So all the footage that we see released by Western media that came from these facilities all was approved by the IDF. So it's been really troubling. So when there was no consequence for that, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised when mere months later they would do it again, and what seems to be in a much more violent and destructive manner.
Right. Thank you. So that brings us up to now. So about 2 weeks ago, a little more, Israel announced that it was conducting an operation to target Hamas in Al-Shifa Hospital. They claimed that Hamas and other fighters had, quote unquote, regrouped at the hospital following the November operation and then Israel's withdrawal. And I want to read what a couple of descriptions of after their withdrawal. You've talked about the medical professionals saying that Al-Shifa is now no longer functional. So the New York Times wrote, Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City stood in ruins on Sunday as if a tsunami had surged through it, followed by a tornado. Tsunami, tornado. And then Euromed Human Rights Monitor, a human rights organization, which has done really what I think is solid reporting from the ground, they called what happened at Al-Shifa Hospital now in this round one of the largest massacres in Palestinian history. And I'm going to quote from their report. They wrote, quote, "The Israeli army carried out a massive, shockingly horrific military operation in Al-Shifa Medical Complex in Gaza City over the course of the past 2 weeks, indiscriminately targeting and attacking Palestinians regardless of their civilian status, professional standing, gender, age, or health condition. Though the exact number of casualties from the atrocity is still unknown, preliminary reports suggest that over 1,500 Palestinians have been killed, injured, or are reported missing as a result of the massacre at Al-Shifa, with women and children making up half of the casualties. Euromed Monitor is able to confirm from its initial investigation and testimonies that hundreds of dead bodies, including some burned and others with their heads and limbs severed, have been discovered both inside Al-Shifa Medical Complex and in the hospital's surrounding area." That's Euromed Human Rights Monitor's report. So I want to ask you, Yara, what do we know? What can you will you talk to us about the Israeli operation in Al-Shifa over the last few weeks?
Yes, absolutely. With, of course, the caveat that with, since it has really just ended a few days ago, there is so much that we still don't know and unfortunately will learn. As the UN special rapporteurs for the occupied Palestinian territories and the right to health wrote, the extent of the atrocity is still unable to be fully documented due to its scale and gravity, and clearly represents the most horrific assault on Gaza's hospitals. So this occurred almost, what, 3 or 4 months to the day after the first raid in November. There were thousands of Palestinians still sheltering at the hospital, hundreds of patients, some medical staff, of course, that was still there. What we know is that the hospital has been left in a state of utter destruction. I mean, I think that these terms are from again, photos, entirely accurate. This is not a targeted operation in order to arrest some militants, which Israel says they did. These are burnt out windows. This is equipment that was clearly smashed. This is, we were told that some of the patients that were there were taken to what was essentially kind of an admin or human resources building that was not equipped for medical care. The World Health Organization has confirmed about 2 dozen patients were killed. And of course, it wasn't just the hospital itself. I think a lot of these numbers that were you just quoted. We saw images that the housing facilities surrounding El-Shifa themselves were also damaged and destroyed. Now, if we've learned one thing from this attack earlier this week, And this is a long overdue lesson because this is a lesson that Palestinians and allies have been trying to make clear for not just months, but years, is that Israel's definition of what is a legitimate target when it comes to what it perceives to be Hamas is extremely broad. So, as a result of this kind of top speed investigation in the case of the killing of seven aid workers, most of whom were Westerners. Of course, we're still waiting for the results of investigations from any number of countless cases where Palestinians were killed, but that's another story. We saw that the perception here was that a Hamas militant had perhaps entered the convoy at some point, and/or that they saw someone carrying a bag, which they perceived to be a weapon. Now, this was the justification for targeting that convoy not once, not twice, but as they escaped to their third car the third time. So, this is a case that we only know about because it got such international attention, again, because of the many international passport holders that were killed in that. But apply that logic to a fully Palestinian hospital with Palestinian medics, Palestinian patients. The only people really covering it in real time are Palestinian journalists. And then try to imagine what Israel will justify in those circumstances. And that's why we see what we have seen when it has come to Al-Shifa. Al-Shifa is a, aside from a hospital, it is a symbol that life still persists in the north of the Gaza Strip. And if Israel's goal is to displace Palestinians from the north, which they have made clear many times, Al-Shifa is a part of that. That is part of that puzzle. As long as Al-Shifa is there, people will shelter there. Medical staff will work there. Early on in October, when the Israelis issued an order, an evacuation order from the entire north, it was medical staff at hospitals like Al-Shifa that said, "We will not leave them here. We will stay. And so as long as there are patients coming, we will be coming." And Israel recognizes this. So we have this abuse of this human shields argument. This argument that places like Al-Shifa lose their protected status because they are used as, Hamas sites of some kind. Now, that argument loses a little bit of its meaning when we recognize that almost every hospital or health facility in Gaza has been bombed, and many are no longer functional. I believe the latest report from the World Health Organization was less than a dozen of the almost 40 are partially functional, these hospitals. So when you couple that with every university, schools, all the houses, all the mosques, all the libraries, all the bakeries, all of that that was also destroyed again in this eradication of Hamas, again, quote unquote, we can see that what was done to Al-Shifa is part of an effort to make life unsustainable in parts of the Gaza Strip and ensure, because after the first time people returned, and you need to ensure that people, it's no longer a place where people can even return. And that's what some of the staff is telling us. So in the coming days, weeks, and especially once we're able to, if Israel permits independent investigations, I think evidence of significant atrocities will be revealed. Testimonies from people that were there said that hospital workers, clinicians were executed, that there was torture, that there was prolonged detainment, again, that patients who needed medical care were not able to receive that care and were placed in buildings where they were unable to receive that care. So this will, I believe, be this is an ugly story that will only get uglier the more information is able to come out.
Thank you for that. The Medical Aid for Palestinians, an NGO that works extensively in Gaza, put out an initial report on what happened there, and they said that the hospital's main surgery building, its intensive care unit, its emergency general surgery and orthopedic departments have all been destroyed. So when you say that it's dysfunctional, that's what the dysfunctionality looks like. moving forward. So where can people in northern Gaza get medical care now?
So in December, as far back as December, which now feels like a million years ago, the World Health Organization said there was basically no fully functional hospital in the north. Now, there were, including Al Shifa, some hospitals that had been able to maintain partial functionality. But in that same MAP report, Medical Aid for Palestinians report that you just cited, they said that in the north, at least 350,000 Palestinians are now served by just about 200 hospital beds. And we have to remember, of course, healthcare is not just having a bed. Think of the hundreds of healthcare workers who have been killed. So many of the hospitals that are left are now being staffed by junior staff that do not have the experience, do not have the materials, and are kind of, trying to do their very best. So even when we talk about availability, we are talking about the absolute bare minimum of people in the most desperate conditions, just trying to keep people alive until they can be evacuated elsewhere.
Right. So this is a report on Al-Shifa and what happened there. And we have to shift from talking about what happened at Al-Shifa to also talking about the narratives around what happened at Al-Shifa Hospital. So many news outlets are reporting on what they're calling the divergent narratives. I saw a Reuters article that said Palestinian officials called the raid a war crime, while, and I'm quoting, Israeli officials said special forces units conducted a targeted strike against a Hamas stronghold deliberately located among vulnerable civilians. And the New York Times wrote, and now I'm quoting again, the symbolism of this hellscape differs according to the beholder. And amid a deep divergence about how the conflict should be reported and explained. And if you'll permit me, I'm going to keep going with how people are describing what happened. Israel's chief military spokesman said, quote, "We had no alternative." That's his term. "We had no alternative to the destruction the IDF caused because," he said, "the IDF was fighting against Hamas and Islamic Jihad in the hospital compound. Hamas and Palestinian medics deny any armed presence inside the hospital." So even if Hamas were inside the hospital, which Hamas is denying, Israel saying they were there, what is Israel's responsibility to the medical staff, the patients, and the more than 6,000 people who were sheltering there?
So that's an easy question. Civilians, under all circumstances, this includes doctors, this includes nurses, this includes patients, this includes people who are just sheltering there, this includes all civilians, are never permitted to be targeted, never. And when we look at the number of civilians that have been killed, not just since October 7th, but over many decades of Israeli violence in both the West Bank and Gaza Strip, you will see a pattern, unfortunately. And this is a pattern that every time this happens, Palestinians have to constantly be reminding people. It is the parameters for attacking a not just hospital, but ambulance, clinic, detaining and kidnapping physicians, all things that there is video evidence of Israel doing. The parameters for attacking hospitals at all are supposed to be so narrow. So the ICRC, which kind of enforces the Geneva Conventions and kind of the laws of war, has made clear in many documents, including many that have been released since October 7th, that if there is any doubt, you cannot attack. If there is any doubt of the militant purpose, if there is any doubt of the indiscriminate harm to civilians, if there is any doubt that even if you give a warning, people cannot evacuate because these are hospitals, right? We patients are typically not mobile. They're in a hospital for a reason. And then physicians are not cannot be possibly expected to leave those patients. These people can never be targeted. It is the it is the responsibility of the belligerent to ensure protection for these people. And if you cannot protect them, you cannot attack these facilities. The mere existence of a Hamas member in a hospital, the mere existence, if some of these images are credible, of, you know, some stores of arms in hospitals, we cannot allow this to justify a 2-week siege and the utter destruction of an entire hospital complex. I mean, really, what are we doing? Israel always says they have no alternative. They have no choice. They have to have all the checkpoints. They have to build the separation wall. They have to continue to expand settlements. Like, all of this is just assumed. This is the status quo. We have no choice. This goes back to this dehumanization of Palestinians, that they are all dangerous or potentially dangerous or support dangerous people, and thus they are inherently all targets, whether they are children, pregnant women, hospitalized patients, or the physicians caring for those patients. And, you know, we have heard Israel use this human shields argument for decades, despite, you know, so much evidence, not only against this practice, but that Israel itself uses Palestinians as human shields, in some cases. And so I think this is an enigmatic, you know, for anyone who was shocked by Al Shifa, the blueprint for this has been written for decades. And, you know, previously, in previous assaults on Gaza, we wrote about the bombing of hospitals. We wrote about the bombing of ambulances. And very little has ever been done about any of it. Israel does not pay reparations for these incidents. Donors have to come back and rebuild these hospitals. You know, the people of Gaza have to try to rebuild the infrastructure, you know, make a whole new generation of healthcare workers to replace those that have been lost. And there's no consequence. There never has been. We have been asking the same questions about Israel's actions in Gaza since 2008. So I'm you know, it's a bit frustrating to continue to have to say, you know, what you see with your eyes, this destruction, believe it. But this is what targeted operation looks like. This. And Israel knows how to do a targeted operation if it wants.
Thank you for all of that. It feels so stark also in the same, this is the same week as you talked about the World Central Kitchen, the attack on the World Central Kitchen convoy, where there is now a worldwide uproar over the attack on these humanitarian workers, as there should be, but it throws into stark relief the worldwide silence over the 196 Palestinian aid workers who have also been killed by Israel in this war. So looking at those two differences, we also learned a couple of things this week that I want to note that I think are really useful. Yuval Abraham published a really important article in 972 magazine on Israel's use of AI to create human targets in Gaza. And this piece has now been covered in The Guardian and The Washington Post, and we'll have links in the show notes. But the piece establishes that the IDF has okayed huge civilian casualties in the context of attacks on both minor and major Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad targets in this war. So more than they did in previous wars, they've changed their own rules. So they've okayed huge civilian casualties, and they've also established this piece that the IDF is basically casting an incredibly wide net in terms of who it considers to be a militant, so that in effect, almost any Palestinian man in Gaza with even the most attenuated relationship to Hamas is a target, a legitimate target, according to the military, including civil servants. And at the same time, also this week, Israeli journalist Barak Ravid told Anderson Cooper on CNN on Tuesday that he's hearing that IDF commanders on the ground, what they're saying is that any man of fighting age is a terrorist and a target. So as you're describing what Israel is is doing to civilians. I want to note that we are getting this documentation coming out from Israeli journalists reporting on the Israeli military directly as well. It's a demonstration of why we should distrust Israeli claims about the numbers of fighters they've killed or captured in this operation. And I say that as an introduction. I want to enter into the record. Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett tweeted this on March 31st, the day of Israel's withdrawal from Al-Shifa. Quote, 6,000 civilians were evacuated by the IDF to keep them safe. 200 Hamas terrorists were killed. 500 Hamas terrorists have been captured. No civilian was killed, not one. This is unprecedented in urban warfare. Our military is learning and improving by the day. These results undermine the false claim that the IDF is targeting civilians. End quote. Yara, will you respond to that claim?
I think this is entirely in the Israeli playbook, this gaslighting of saying what you see, what you hear with your own eyes, with your own ears, is lies. The UN is lies. Alex Duvall lies. The World Health Organization lies. World Central Kitchen, I'm sure, will be accused of something terrible in the coming, you know, like everyone is a liar. The only people you can trust are Israelis and their own investigations, despite mountains of evidence that, including video evidence, that they lie and obscure. And, you know, only later, when the New York Times or somebody does an investigation, in a very few cases, will they admit wrongdoing. They should be completely non-credible. And of all people to take credibly, Naftali Bennett is not one of them. And that's all I'll say.
Thank you. Thank you for your clarity.
Oh, I do want to interrupt and add, you know, this report about all quote unquote, you know, battle aged or military aged men. This is something that, you know, the United States has experience with in the quote unquote war on terror, when we were conducting these drone strikes, and a whistleblower reported that any man who was between, you know, what, 25 or and 45 or something, was considered a killed militant. The United States did this. So we should all be very skeptical about numbers coming out that are only verified by the militaries that are producing them.
Thank you for that. I want to zoom out for the close of our podcast. As you've discussed, the destruction of Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, is part of the destruction of the infrastructure for human life in Gaza. I want to cite the definition of genocide as it's laid out in Article 2 of the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, which says, quote, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Yara, will you talk to us about the conclusions that you are drawing from this latest operation in Al-Shifa and its implications?
Yeah, I think it's no accident that the destruction of the health system and all social determinants of health, access to food, water, et cetera, played such a large role in South Africa's genocide case against Israel. And we'll remember that the ICJ did find evidence of plausible genocide and recommended several measures that Israel had to take to prevent this. Israel has not taken those measures. In fact, we've seen some of the worst atrocities and massacres since that filing. South Africa had to go back and request additional emergency provisional measures. The UN Security Council has finally, even though it was a lukewarm, you know, resolution, came forth to push for a ceasefire and open aid channels. None of that has happened. What has happened is the destruction of everything needed to sustain life in most of the Gaza Strip. And now we are hearing that Israel is persisting in its cause to now invade Rafah, where most people from Gaza who cannot afford the tens of thousands of dollars it takes to leave through Egypt are sheltering, where the few remaining hospitals are. Israel has, caused an increase in women miscarrying. It has prevented, we are seeing just every aspect needed to sustain life have been destroyed. The UN and I believe the World Bank actually just released a report earlier this week of the billions of dollars of damage it's going to take after the years of clearing all of this rubble, all this unexploded ordnance. People in Gaza, those who may still have somewhere to return to, cannot safely return anytime soon. Israel has already declared some form of security zone or buffer zone, I don't know what they're calling it, that has seized some percentage of the land in the Gaza Strip. We have major Israeli government ministers attending conferences promoting settlement in the Gaza Strip. We have a Israeli government who, even by the families of the hostages, are doing nothing to actually, if as they said, if that's their priority, they don't appear to seem to care very much, which the families of the hostages agree to. So I think when you look at all of this together, the incitement, the displacement, the destruction, the willful flouting of international humanitarian law, I mean, just this week, we had the bombing of the siege of El Shifa ending. We had the killing of the humanitarian convoy in that just horrific sounding way. Israel bombed an embassy in Syria. Israel is continuing to bomb in Lebanon. I mean, I don't know what other evidence would be expected to be produced other than everything that we have seen and heard thus far that I think adds credence to South Africa's case. And despite the fact that the ICJ has acted far too slowly and the ICC has not really acted at all, and we can't put our faith in these institutions because at the end of the day, they are mechanisms of an international order that has permitted this to happen to Palestinians to begin with. I do not doubt how these actions will be seen in retrospect. And I only wish that we could recognize them while they're happening so we can stop them.
Thank you for all of that. I'm reminded of your great conversation with Alex Duvall, where these questions of famine and starvation are often similar to genocide. They are assessments that are usually made after the fact.
Yes,
But
exactly.
he, among others, was raising the alarm now already a couple of months ago about this imposed starvation, imposed famine. And
Right.
the alarm has only continued to increase since then, and the harm, the threat of imminent death from famine, and the long-term harm of malnourishment, is that ball is already rolling.
Yes, it's too late for so many terrible things to have. Even again, like we are past the point of a ceasefire ending much of the suffering. It is really, I it is really shocking to watch in real time.
I'm so grateful to you, Yara, for your expertise and your careful and thorough analysis and insight, and also just your deep clarity. So thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with our audience today. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah Ann. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning into this episode of Occupied Thoughts. Please make sure to check out our website, www.fmep.org, for resources related to this podcast. We're going to have links to many of the conversations and sources that we cited, and also for lots of other rich content related to Palestine and Israel, and especially on this war on Gaza. And make sure that you're subscribed to this podcast to stay up to date. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Spotify. You can also watch versions of our podcast, including this one, including all of Yara Assi's conversations with FMAP on YouTube. And with that, I am Sarah Ann Minkin, signing off until our next episode of FMAP's Occupied Thoughts. Take care.